You're listening to Lanyap, a weekly digest of news, personal finance, brotherly banter, and whatever else is on our minds. From Stokes Family Office.
Happy Friday, everyone. Today is December 15th. It has been a great week in the markets. Great December, great November preceding that. This is Greg Stokes with my brother Doug Lanyap podcast. Doug, what do you make of this last 6 weeks? It's been a wild ride. Last year, everything was correlated, meaning stocks were down, bonds were down. It was either the worst year on record for a 60-40 stock bond, 60% stock, 40% bond balance portfolio. This year, in the last 6 weeks, everything's been correlated as well, but in the right way, meaning stocks have gone up, bonds have gone up. But I'd love to get your opinion on what's happening, what's your take on all of this, so take it away.
Yeah, I think what the market is really declaring is that the interest rate hiking cycle is over, and that's essentially what Federal Reserve Chairman Powell said this week, that before his session, this was like the November or October session, they had anticipated one rate hike in 2024, followed by two rate cuts. Now their dot plots suggested zero rate hikes and three rate cuts. And essentially, what that means is two things. Number one, that inflation is tempering a lot quicker than they had anticipated. We've been talking about that pretty extensively for a while. And the other thing is that the labor market is cooling enough so that they're not concerned about a restart of inflation going forward, that the economy and labor in particular, wage growth, et cetera, is all tempering. And so the market has responded in two ways. Number one, interest rates have come down pretty dramatically. I think the 10-year treasury topped out at about 5% at the end of October. It's now below 4%. These are massive moves in interest rates to the level that hasn't really been seen at all historically. So basically a 20% move in rates in 30, 45 days, number one. And that's just not just on the 10-year, even the 2-year, 5-year, the 20-year, the 30-year, all interest rates are coming down. And if you're a believer in the relationship of interest rates and asset prices, if interest rates go down, then your base rate that you need, your hurdle rate, goes down as well. So if the risk-free rate goes from 5 to 4%, then all other assets don't need to achieve a 5% plus rate of return anymore. They just have to breach a 4% rate of return. And so what that really means is that valuations can go up in response to that. So that's at least theoretically how that works. What I'm most interested in, at least this week, is the massive move that you've seen in small caps compared to large cap companies. I just looked at on December the 13th, the Russell 2000 was at 1871. It breached 2000 yesterday. So 2000 over 1870. That's a 7% move this week in small caps. And I've been thinking about just theorizing why small caps have moved so dramatically. And I think that it's really twofold. Number one, typically if you're a smaller cap company, you have a higher level of debt. Number one, and number two, you probably have a lot of these are more asset heavy type companies. So manufacturing, industrial, energy, et cetera, that carry higher levels of debt that are typically didn't get to experience the refinancing cycle of 2020 and 2021, or didn't get to fix their debt for longer periods of time. And so rates are going to be hugely impactful to these types of companies that have to refinance higher levels of debt. Lower rates are obviously better for profitability for those types of companies. So I think what we're seeing in small cap land is just a reset of valuations based upon where interest rates have moved over the last week.
Yeah, the small cap story is really interesting. So is the value story. This is from the head of WisdomTree. So the S&P 500 trades at 20 times price to earnings, or 5% earnings yield, implying a 7 to 8% nominal returns over 5 to 7 years. And apparently there's a 10-point spread between the tech and non-tech at 27 PE for tech and 17 for ex-tech and large caps, meaning that if you were to peel off tech from the S&P 500, it's way, it pushes the valuations on that are obviously way higher than the overall market. And likewise, ex-tech or excluding technology is way lower. And then small cap is like trading at 12 to 13 times price to earnings. So there is a lot of value in small cap, especially if you compare it relative to large cap growth. But the earnings yield on small cap is a lot higher.
That valuation disconnect was justified when if rates are really high. These are basically slower growth companies that have higher levels of debt that are not as competitively advantaged, like an Amazon or Google or Apple, et cetera, that are essential monopolies. So lower profitability, slower growth, higher levels of debt should command a discount. But this goes both ways. When that narrative turns and these companies are actually achieving better profitability and their interest rates are on their debt are coming down, then you can go from 12 to 15 or 16 times price to earnings pretty quickly. And if you get that trade right, that's a pretty crazy move in value.
Right. Especially if their earnings start to accelerate, which could happen, especially if we avoid a recession. And that's really what's been the driver of the market in the last couple of years, is the inevitability or supposed inevitability of a recession. We've talked about this many times, but in 2022, something like 99% of Fortune 500 CEOs, according to Bloomberg, predicted that we were going to have a recession. Lo and behold, as of now, we've avoided a recession. The Fed is starting to see some softening in data, so we may end up getting a recession. Who knows? But as it relates to what the market is seeing right now, is they're seeing all the right things. The market's seeing all the right things, meaning they're seeing that inflation's slowing down. Costco, for example, just came out with their earnings yesterday. They saw inflation for the last quarter at just between 0 and 1%. On top of that, you've got the primary driver of inflation, according to the Fed's calculus, is home prices and rents, et cetera. Those are coming down even more.
Cullen Roche just put a note out that this was from December 12th after the inflation numbers were released. He says CPI less shelter is now at 1.4%.
Wow.
So, it's moving in that direction that we've been talking about really all year. We referred back to trueflation and really a lot in the fourth quarter of last year and first quarter of this year. That lag effect of rents is starting to show up in the numbers in a positive way for those who are deflationists or disinflationists, as we've been this year. And so now we're seeing the results of that rates are coming down, the Fed is stalling. And if I'm looking at next year, the risk is staying too tight for too long, where inflation turns into deflation. And that's never been good for markets. And so it's not that we're without risk. It's the game is not over. And I think that that's what the narrative is in the market this week, that I've been seeing that picture or that meme of George W. Bush on the aircraft carrier with a mission accomplished banner after the invasion of Iraq. This was about 20 years before we actually pulled out. Which is basically people saying that the market's declaring victory before the war's over. And I think that that's a pretty good take, that there's always going to be risk out there. Short-termism and short-term thinking can lead you into traps. And if you buy good quality companies at reasonable prices and hold them for a long time, if you buy high quality bonds at 4 to 5%, and hold them to maturity, I think you're going to do all right.
Yep. So this is from Michael Antulli from 19. So right now, as it stands, the Dow hit an all-time high earlier this week at 37,000. The S&P 500 is essentially at its all-time high on a total return basis, meaning if you include dividends. So we're basically back. And this particular bear market was pretty nasty. In terms of total declines, the Dow was down 21% at its low. The S&P 500 was down 25%. And the NASDAQ was down 35% at its low.
basically all of them are back at their all-time highs within a few percentage points. And then from 1950 to 2020, the average bear market took 338 days to bottom and 603 days to return to break even. So 338 to bottom. This one, this most recent one, took 281 days to bottom. And we're not at an all-time high quite yet, but it's, we're basically there. But it's been 709 days since the high in 2022. So this, as it stands right now, this has basically painted itself to be a pretty average bear market. Was not.
Yeah, but that doesn't take. Yeah, that doesn't take into account bonds. I mean, we had the worst bond bear market in history. So yeah,
that was the unique flavor about this one.
Yeah. So I think when you hear, like, I was listening to a podcast on the way into the office this morning, and they were, you know, they're declaring victory and saying that, they said this has been a victory without any casualties. And I'm thinking, unless you
own bonds,
right? Yeah. So, I mean, every bear market has its own unique issues associated with it. And I think, you know, if you're a real estate investor that started developing in 2020 or 2021, or if you're a bond market investor that held bonds that were purchased in 2020 or 2021, I think casualty is the right terminology for that.
Absolutely. So speaking of bonds, we've talked about this before, but the 10-year treasury yield in March of 2020 was 0.5%, so 0.5%. It didn't quite get over 5% on a closing basis, but did peak over 5% intraday in September or October. It's in the, like Doug mentioned earlier, it's come down precipitously and is now like 3.9%. That reverberates through the economy because everything's priced according to treasuries, including stocks, including real estate, mortgages, et cetera. So that big move is really powerful. And in the last couple of days, the yields on interest grade bonds had their biggest move down since April of 2020. So during the height of COVID. So when people were seeking the shelter of on a risk off basis during COVID, the yields came down because of a flight to safety. The same thing happened the last couple of days because of the dramatic movement in the interest rate environment. As it relates to right now, the S&P 500 is about, 47.12, which somebody observed that we're only 30 points away from Goldman's year-end target. And then for year-end 2024. So all of the banks came out with their forecasts
early. Well, those will be revised.
Right, exactly.
At the end.
They're definitely going to be revising that. So all these banks came out with their forecasts for what they thought the S&P 500 was going to do next year. And Goldman thought it was going to be about right where it is right now. But it's been a really strong.
It's funny. When they came out with that, I was like, I'll take that all day. It was like a 10% increase from where markets were pricing the S&P at the time. And I was like, yeah, it'd be great. It's another 10% year. Well, we got that in 45 days.
Right.
So
it has been an interesting, six weeks and that's what happens in the markets. Like what they say is that if you miss like the first or the best 10 days in the S&P 500, you miss something like the 50% of the total return in the markets. And the same thing basically happened over the last 6 weeks, essentially people that were sitting out or waiting for the right time to buy, when people say I'm going to wait till later to invest, usually that means I'm going to wait till prices are higher, meaning they don't want to buy when prices are lower. That's the interesting thing about investments.
Yeah, psychologically, they think they're going to buy lower, but every time the market goes lower, they say they're going to continue to wait.
Right, which means I want to pay more for. It's like normally when consumers, they like to buy things on sale, but when the market goes on sale, the last thing they want to do is to buy in the markets. But it's essentially what happened is the last 6 weeks in both the bond and stock markets, like I mentioned at the outset of the podcast, things have been very highly correlated on and stocks and bonds have gone up dramatically. So it's been an interesting 6 weeks. I still think bonds present a pretty compelling value even at these rates. The Fed's priced, it's next year, the market's pricing the Fed to start cutting rates around March and to have a total of 3 or 4 cuts to bring the Fed funds rate into the 3s in not too much time. Right now it's in the mid 5s. And so if you think about you buying in the 4 or 5%, fixing your bond portfolio in the 4 or 5% range now, relative to the expected inflation the Fed is going to have at like 2% prospectively, it still presents a pretty compelling value, albeit not as compelling as what it was when interest rates were in the 5, 6, 7% range, but still is.
I'll say the same thing about stocks. I mean, if you people worry about when prices go, like the last since November 1st, I think you're going to have people worried about putting money to work after such a big move. But I think that wisdom tree chart that you have is a really good one, especially if you think about the market excluding the technology sector is very reasonably valued. The historic, this goes back 30 years, the median price to earnings ratio for S&P 500 X tech or excluding tech is 16.6 times. It's currently 17.1. Small and mid caps are severely discounted to that. There is a lot of value that's still in this market. And so the move that you saw this week, I think you have this coiled spring of small and mid caps that really haven't experienced the move that your Magnificent Seven have experienced this year. I mean, NASDAQ being up as much as it is this year, people expect them to those NASDAQ companies to come back down to earth. What happens if it's the other way? What happens if small and mid cap and basically everything excluding tech catches up instead of NASDAQ comes back to earth? So I think that that's a very reasonable and high likelihood that you don't have this crash effect that everybody that's a contrarian expects. Maybe you just have a reversal in who the leaders are. The leaders are not the Magnificent Seven anymore. The leaders are this year's laggards, just like last year's leaders are this year's laggards. This year's laggards might be next year's leaders.
And then on a broader perspective, you have the fact that the Fed has raised rates to 5 and change or whatever means that they can lower rates to stimulate the economy if they need to. That's something that they did not have available to them not too long ago when rates were 0. They couldn't cut rates to below 0, although some European economies did. But now they have that available, that tool in their tool belt. Companies have basically gotten more efficient. They have, even though unemployment rate is at historic lows, they've cooled on hiring. Consumers still have these locked in rates at 2. I think the average mortgage rate is like 3.5% on a macro global basis. It looks as it stands right now, there's been some sort of like olive branch between the United States and China, which China has basically been decoupled from the global economy over the last few years, starting in 2018 with the tariffs that were put into place. If that relationship starts to get rekindled, there's a potential positive on that. So there's all kinds of and then it looks like in terms of the Russia-Ukraine conflict, that's becoming a stalemate, which that might result in a peace deal. So there's all these things that were like big risks, basically, from the standpoint of the Ukraine-Russia war, China, the interest rate cycle. These things could potentially be a tailwind if they start to move in the right direction. And then all the while you have valuations at really reasonable rates, like you're saying. So if there's them
for most stocks,
for most stocks, right? Other stocks like Nvidia, for example, are trading at, I don't even know, like hundreds of times their revenue or whatever.
Speaking of Nvidia, I found this really interesting. I remember when I first got into the industry, I was interested in individual stock selection and I was looking at like themes in the markets at the time. And I think the big theme at the time was the potential impact of the Internet of Things. And so I really took that to heart and I was like, I need to buy a company that is going to benefit from the Internet of Things. And so I put some money into Intel since they were the biggest chip company in the world. And so I think actually my directional thinking was correct, but the problem is I picked the wrong company. This was from John Ehrlichman a couple of days ago. He said 2003 valuations, Intel, $220 billion, NVIDIA, $3 billion. 2023 valuations, Intel, $180 billion. So they've actually declined in market valuation over the last 20 years.
NVIDIA, $1.2 trillion. Went from $3 billion to $1.2 trillion over the last 20 years. And maybe that's just a lesson in trying to avoid stock selection, but that one hurts.
Well, you know what? There's back when I was in undergrad, I remember the big thing at that point in time was like the green wave or whatever, meaning like everything was going to be clean and sustainable and everything. And that was a big investment theme, renewables, et cetera. I guess that has been a general theme that's worked out. Semiconductors also have been a general big picture theme. But there's other things like that has worked out, but there's other things that were really in vogue recently, like cryptocurrency, for example, that everybody that was graduating from the top universities in the country were getting into crypto. And that seems to have fallen off a little bit, although there's been some sort of like recent springs in the valuations of some of those cryptocurrencies. But there's a lot of whatever may be in vogue in terms of, even if you get a directionally right pick, like you're, in your case, you were directionally right about the Internet of Things. But then again, you missed on the actual company, unfortunately.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
1,000x or whatever on your investment if you would pick them. But that goes to show you that's the issue when you have, like, Intel was the founder of Intel, Andy, I don't remember his last name, wrote a book called Only the Paranoid Survive or something like that. And it was all about being basically running your company like the horde.
Andy Grove
wrote that book that was all about running your company like the hounds were running at your and biting at your heels or whatever. And lo and behold, they did not run their company like Only the Paranoid Survive, and it just ended up becoming another bureaucratic company that it basically has floundered for the last decade.
Yeah, they went from Only the Paranoid Survive to the innovator's dilemma.
Right.
Basically, you get too big that you get a little bit complacent, and then competitors come up and you know, eat your lunch.
Right. Bureaucracy prevailed in that particular case.
Yep. Well, we're around Christmas season this time, so we're gonna keep the episode short. We're about 20 minutes in now, so we'll be back next week for a Christmas episode. But we hope you like this one. Hope you enjoy the rest of your holiday season, and please, if you like this episode, share it with your friends and give us a 5-star review.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Lanyap. This podcast is brought to you by Stokes Family Office. If you liked this episode, consider sharing it with a friend. You can subscribe to future episodes in Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. For more information about Stokes Family Office and Lanyap, visit us at stokesfamilyoffice.com. The information in this podcast is educational and general in nature and does not take into consideration the listener's personal circumstances. Therefore, it is not intended to be a substitute for specific, individualized financial, legal, or tax advice. To determine which strategies or investments may be suitable for you, consult the appropriate qualified professional prior to making a final decision.